I'm Devin.
I'm Chris.
And we're here to do Yoga for the Body Politic.
Yes.
We want to talk today about patience or impatience, the play around those sensations that we try to name with those words. Mm-hmm. And we want to try out a little bit of a different structure today and see how it goes, wanting to be more intentional about who's holding space and who's sharing. Wanting to create a little bit more spaciousness around the sharing, and ideally wanting to offer some more obvious modeling of some of the tools that we use for ourselves and with each other to work through the muddle of political, ethical, emotional, personal that happens around any of these experiences, physical, that happens around any of these scenarios, like life experiences that we're wanting to be more present for and more active in.
My chair is super creaky. That's what's going on in the background.
So, yeah, patience, impatience. So we're wanting to make a little bit of quiet space again today for you to consider a recent experience where you maybe felt a lack of patience, or where you were able to get in touch with patience and it changed the setting for you. It changed your responsibility. And Chris is going to do the same. And then I'm going to ask her some questions about it and try to draw out the nature of her experience. And then we'll put those questions into the show notes so that if you want to sit down with your scenario or with a different scenario that you maybe get challenged by, then you could see if any of those questions ring a bell for you or help you step more fully into your sensing and your desire to be responsible for how you address and respond to that challenge. So, a little bit of quiet, patience or impatience, time when you struggled or a time when you broke through struggle. You feel good?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm ready. Maybe.
Do you feel uncomfortable? Appropriately uncomfortable?
I feel.
To have this conversation?
Appropriately ready.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go. Will you tell me about your scenario?
Yeah. So I've been having this school stuff go on, which I talked about last time too. And I'm tired of talking about it, but it's the thing that kept coming up for me. And the tired of talking about it is maybe an interesting piece. So there's been some various situations happening at my school that have been upsetting for me.
I think we've made this clear, but Chris teaches philosophy.
I teach philosophy.
She's a community college teacher.
Yes. And the situation was sort of initiated by some students, but really it's the school that I've been feeling frustrated with in the way that they've dealt with the situation. I guess it wasn't so much impatience. Well, when I was initially having conversations with people at the school about how we might handle this other situation with the students, I definitely had impatience. And the feeling of impatience that I was having was that I had valuable things to contribute to the conversation and they weren't going to be heard. The way that the impatience felt to me was like sort of being pulled forward, but not being able to go forward. We talked about this in our live event too, or I was thinking of it in the live event anyway. But the feeling of impatience for me, I think there's two parts. And the first part is, like I said, being pulled forward, but not able to go forward, being kept from going forward. And the other part is like an underlying threat or fear that I won't be able to contribute a valuable thing that I have to contribute. And I don't have that feeling anymore. I have more openness around it, finally. And part of that is the acceptance that I don't think I'm going to be heard in the way that I want to be heard. Mm-hmm. And so sort of the threat happened. But I also had a great deal of impatience with myself because I was very upset about this situation. I still am in some ways. And the impatience with myself was, why are you still upset about it?
Yeah. So one of the first places that I wanted to go was just around body sensations. And you described very well the like pulled forward but held back at the same time, which like as a yoga teacher, I often am pointing people to those paired sensations that can feel like ambivalence, mm-hmm. but can also feel like support. Right? That if I'm pulled forward and there's nothing restraining me from going forward, then there isn't support. And at the same time, that pairing can feel really like being torn, right?
Yeah.
Or pulled apart, or which I name often in a physical sense, ambivalence. So I'm curious if you identify with either the pulled forward sensation or the held back sensation in that impatience mode.
Yeah, I feel more like I'm the one wanting to push forward and something external is the thing that's holding back. And I was noticing in this conversation that I'm thinking of, because it was the one that was strongest in my body, that when I would do work to ground myself, like here's the chair, here's the floor, here's my breath, that the pulling wasn't as strong and it did feel more spacious, even though I wasn't getting to say the thing that I felt was valuable.
So that grounding that you just described, those are partially just tools for coming into the present moment.
Right.
Noticing present conditions. And when you say that you're feeling more open.
Not that I feel more open, but it feels like there's more space for me. And that's why it doesn't feel like there's a pushback. Like instead of being in this, like, I don't know, I'm thinking of like horses in the circular corrals.
Okay, yeah.
And instead of being like right up against the edge of the corral and wanting to keep pushing, I can bring myself back more toward the middle. So I'm still sort of trapped. I still can't get the thing that I want to get, but now there's not pressure on my body anymore.
Yeah. Beautiful. So in the process for you of moving sort of more toward the center of the corral, can you talk about anything that was helpful to you, like process or practice wise, to help yourself be aware of the space that there actually was or is around you?
Well, like I said, in the moment of the conversation, feeling the floor under my feet and feeling the chair under my butt and feeling my breath in my body, those all helped me step back so that I wasn't pushing against the edge of the corral. But I don't think that those brought me toward the middle. And I feel like the impatience that I've been feeling, like, why are you still upset about this, was like wanting to get further away from the edge. And so coming to a place of acceptance of my voice isn't going to be heard in the way that I want it to be heard right now has helped me move toward the middle. And something that you said the other day when I was talking to you about this personally was about heartbreak, and thinking of it like heartbreak helped a lot because it gave me context for why I was still so upset.
Yeah. And that really feels to me the place that my mind is right now. I just this week got to see Lama Rod Owen speak. He was talking specifically about anger, but in our live event where we talked about impatience and patience, we talked about impatience as a cover or a pointer to a deeper emotion, an indicator. And he was talking about anger the same way. He was like, anger is the flag or the pointer that shows us where the hurt is. And I was thinking about that around impatience as a similar indicator that the pull forward, right, or the bumping into the edge is actually speaking to us somewhat about what the deeper emotion is that we're trying to get away from,
mm-hmm.
that we're trying to move away from quickly in our moment of impatience. And I also want to take this conversation really into the political ethical dimension. And at the same time, without making it too personal, I'm wanting to ask you about core values of yours that you feel like are being touched
mm-hmm.
by this experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that when our core values get touched, that's a site for real hurt.
Yeah.
And that real hurt is often something that we want to go away from pretty quickly.
Yeah, that sounds right. I've been thinking about that too. I've been thinking about what are the values that I'm wanting to protect, and I've noticed that I have like a grippiness or stubbornness that is also pointing me towards something. And I'm still working on uncovering what that is. So it seems easy to say that at least part of it is about fairness. And also, the way that we start to develop relationships and the place that we come from in doing that. So I've been using the word trust, and one of my other friends pointed out that maybe that's too strong a word. But at least not coming into relationship with an idea that you have to protect yourself or assume that the other person is going to like be out to get you. And as I say that, that reminds me of something else that's interesting for me to notice, but I think I'll keep it to myself for now.
Okay.
So I'm hesitating a lot because I don't know how much to go into the details of the situation.
Yeah.
You know, there's students involved and other people involved. But the situation was that some students appeared to
allegedly
cheat.
They allegedly
cheated
each other.
And because my syllabus did not explicitly say the consequences for plagiarizing, the school has sided with the students. And they probably wouldn't say that they sided with the students, but the students don't have a major consequence. The part that felt like betrayal to me was that the syllabus has really been emphasized as important and almost like a legal document, and that my syllabus is there to protect me. And every time someone says that, I think, protect me from who, or protect me from what? If I'm coming to teaching from a place of feeling like the first thing I have to do is protect myself, then it doesn't seem like that's a place that I can have openness and transparency in my teaching. And it doesn't seem like a place I can develop the sort of rapport I'd like to develop with my students. Which isn't to say that I want my students to be my friends, or that I want my students to trust me implicitly, or even that I want to form a mentorship relationship with all 100 plus of my students. But just, I don't want to approach a relationship with my students from a position of, you might hurt me. And I don't want to approach my relationship with the school in a position of, you might not have my back, which was already there because I'm adjunct and I'm don't have a opportunity to have tenure right now. They could fire me at any second. So just like the seeing of the instability that was already there, the reason I like to teach is to exchange knowledge and ideas and to like help people uncover their ability to think carefully and subtly and nuanced about the ways that they engage with themselves and with each other. And if I have to come from a place of protection, then that's not a thing that I can do. And so I guess the underlying value that was so shocking to me to discover that I don't appear to share with the school is this value of education, of knowledge.
Yeah.
Both of the self and of the world and of ideas.
Mm-hmm. Right. So sitting with that, like sitting with that value, it feels to me like that is a really big resource, connecting to that value, both for your, like the emotional aspect of self-care that's always to me really important when we're sinking into the level of where's the hurt and can I notice the hurt so that I can act from my value instead of acting from the hurt. Yeah, it feels like a really big resource that articulated and like mulled over where is the value for me. And while you were talking, I was thinking about this Kurt Vonnegut piece where he talks about common human decency.
Mm-hmm.
He's this dry old dude. And it's not like Buddhist language. And at the same time, it feels really, his description feels really a lot like basic compassionate loving kindness.
Yeah.
That is put forth in Buddhism so much. That's right. Like, this is the ground that we stand on for our interactions with each other.
Right.
And for our interactions with ourselves.
And that's, I think, the other big value that feels threatened is that I want to see my students as fellow humans that have a baseline decency. Mm-hmm. They are that. And so are the other people that I work with at this college. That's the thing that all the humans are. Mm-hmm. It feels to me that the request is not to see anyone that way. Uh-huh.
And for you not to be seen that way,
right,
by the students,
right,
or by your employers,
right,
or by people who potentially could be mentors or guides for you,
right,
in the context of the educational institution, or at the very least could be resources in a more like practical sense.
Mm-hmm.
If you are not seen that way by them as a being wrapped around an essential core of compassion or decency,
mm-hmm,
or as a person who's acting from basic decency, and if you can't operate that way with your students
or with the administration,
then we have this out of syncness,
mm-hmm,
where if the value isn't shared, then again, I'm going to use the language of like landing or standing, which is so often in Buddhism, like, or taking refuge,
mm-hmm,
where we're talking about or feeling for, if I'm going to go out and be brave and let go of some of the attachments that I'm maintaining, then I need this other thing. I need this core belief. I need to be in touch with this value as a resource,
mm-hmm,
right?
That feels to me like part of the work that's been happening for me very recently, like, mm-hmm, in the last 2 days,
right,
where I can start to feel like, I met with my colleagues who also teach philosophy at the school. I could see that they have these shared beliefs with me too. Mm-hmm. And then it felt also like the space was bigger. It's not just me holding down these ideas of decency, and it's not just me holding down these ideas of the value of thinking carefully and nuanced about ideas, mm-hmm, and concepts and the world around us.
Mm-hmm.
That felt more spacious. Mm-hmm. And also, I think I talked about my bucket of compassion lotion that, mm-hmm, I could just, mm-hmm, open up and reach in and be like, oh yeah, you're here. Mm-hmm. And just like goop all over myself. When I've got the goop on me, it's easier to see how other people might need some of it too.
Beautiful. That's what I'm thinking about, is that what we've talked about is impatience and how impatience can point us toward the hurt,
mm-hmm,
and the hurt can point us toward the value.
Mm-hmm.
And the value, I feel like then, just like the compassion lotion, one of the possible outcomes of connecting to the value and of really like coding up with the compassion is the possibility of getting access to patience.
Yeah, that sounds right. That's a really nice connection.
So I'm feeling for what one of the things that we talked about in the live meeting about this was the sort of exploitation of the idea of patience.
Mm-hmm.
The oppressed classes should be more patient.
Right.
That language pops up. And you mentioned, I think it was you, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Letter from a Birmingham jail. Mm-hmm. And King's response to that kind of exploitation of language.
Right.
And so always in here, I'm wanting to, and always with this project, we're wanting to be really specific and nuanced in how we make the reclamation of language for humanistic purposes. Mm-hmm. And how we clarify, we think this is manipulative use of language for purposes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And versus this is the possibility of patience in the context that we're talking about. Like, if we say this is the meaning we want this word to have for us, is this lets me stay engaged with my value,
yeah,
in an environment that doesn't support my value.
Yeah. I'll add to that, being able to be in touch with the value creates a spaciousness and makes, at least in my feeling, like the threat not go away.
Mm-hmm.
It's like still very present, but it
is... But like
is,
you said, there's insulation, there's, right? You get
yeah,
this
there's
coding.
A space from it.
Yeah.
For sure, patience in that sense is a thing that I think King is definitely talking about having, because the threat is very... real and omnipresent. It's not going away.
In the past and in the future.
Mm-hmm. The thing that the clergyman who wrote this letter that he's responding to when he writes the letter from Birmingham jail are saying, just be patient. Mm-hmm. And what Devin's mentioned is this exploitive way wherein patient doesn't mean connect with your central value, but rather means be smaller,
mm-hmm.
talk less.
Right.
Stop pointing us about how this value is being neglected and is creating harm.
Right. So feeling for the possibility of patience that comes from connection to value in that way that we're saying, like, Dr. King was ultimately patient because he just kept trying and he kept going to his resources and connecting again and again with the resources that supported his core values, right? Which
yeah.
is like part of the whole conversation that I feel like is happening right now, where people are like, can we not have Dr. King be separate from the rest of the movement? Can we uphold mm-hmm. all of these other people
and,
who were so essential?
And not have the movement of civil rights be separate from his work in workers' rights and separate from his
right.
work in anti-Vietnam War stuff.
Which is part of the nuancing, where if we take Dr. King out of the exploitative context of like continued white supremacy and like, look at this cute guy who we've decided is safe and we approve of him. He was the right kind of patient,
mm-hmm.
right? And like you say, get the nuance of connecting to all these different bridges of values. You can't soundbite it in the same way, right?
Yeah.
That to me is like, that's what I need patience for so often, is my inability to understand something right away, or my ability to see all the sides of the issue. And especially when the issue is emotionally loaded and I'm feeling undermined
mm-hmm.
in my values
mm-hmm.
and undermined in my own essential valuing of myself.
Yeah.
There is that strong response, which is a reaction to feeling harmed. And again, that so often has an impulse inside of it or behind it, which is an impulse to harm. And the patience that we're talking about is the patience to stay with yourself and stay with your value so that you can make and take actions that are not driven from the anger or impatience that is on top of the injury,
mm-hmm.
right? So that we can take actions that are nuanced.
Right.
And so that we can continue to modify our actions.
Yeah. And see,
as we gather more information.
Yeah. And in my case, modify my actions in the case of the school situation means which things am I gripping to for the sake of gripping to them, mm-hmm. and which things am I wanting to stay with mm-hmm. because they're fulfilling this value. And I really liked what you said about undermining the sense of value in myself, mm-hmm. because a thing that I value in myself qua teacher is like developing rapport and communication with the students, mm-hmm. and is like seeing them as equal beings to myself. It can feel like when they say the syllabus, the syllabus, the syllabus, that that's not a place that I'm allowed to teach from. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the things that I was really gripping tightly to were not really the thing that was supporting that value, mm-hmm. and being able to loosen my grip on some of those that was becoming like maybe even convulsively tighter because everything felt so threatened, mm-hmm. is also a thing that feels more spacious.
Mm-hmm. What you were saying actually put me in mind of the civil rights movement again, in the sense that there was that bubbling up of like, oh, you put a lid on it here in this one place and then it pops up mm-hmm. here somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So there's this sticking with it, but not necessarily sticking with the grip of we're going to win in this one place,
right.
but sticking with the value and with the community so that the value in the community comes up in these other places.
Yeah. In a maybe not great analogy, but it's making me think of the lava flow in Hawaii right now,
yeah.
where it's not the volcano, the crater itself that's like spurting up all this lava, but all of these 20 something fissures all over.
Right.
And the lava's like a community of value that's right. got a bunch of different
yeah.
places it's spurting up.
Yeah. And that's a lot of where the conversation is, I think, in like sustained activist communities right now is like, how do we do, right? Like emergent strategy.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do this work in a way that lets us be in connection, right? Because you think of the lava and it's like all together.
Yeah.
There's this sense of network and support and
yeah.
resource that's not like I'm the one person who's holding off
right.
oppression for all these other people, but rather I'm going to reach out and
right.
be in touch with the experience of my value
right.
and trust, just like you were saying, trust the common decency of that value as it pops up
right.
in all these different places.
Right. And also remembering, like, you only see it when it pops up, but it's underneath. The network and the connection are much deeper and much more coherent than they appear because we only get to see it in the places that it pops up.
And in that sense, the feeling of patience for me is often that feeling of trusting that it will happen.
Yeah.
And trusting that there is time.
Yeah. And trusting there's the connection and flow beneath the surface.
Yes. Yeah. Other people are working on this and I'm not the only one and I'm going to have a chance to say my piece.
Mm-hmm.
It's
two
just
people who
not
will listen.
This chance.
Yeah.
That's a place that I would push back a little bit because we talked about resignation
mm-hmm.
as a thing that we wanted to be clear was not patience.
Right.
And when you were saying, I'm sort of acknowledging that the thing I was afraid of already happened and that my voice is not going to be heard, I was like, ooh, tippy. That's like tippy. But if it's connected to, if that moment of resignation actually puts your power back into your value so that you can be ready to be heard some other place, some other time.
Yeah, you're exactly right to point that out. And I also want to add to that, that that feeling wasn't a wholesome feeling to me until I met with my colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was not resignation that I should just not expect to be heard, but these are not the people who are interested in hearing me right now. And then with my colleagues, it was okay, here are people who are interested in hearing me right now.
Right. And I do think that the soft value of patience, which is different than forcing something through
mm-hmm.
or gripping, can be the staying in connection to the value while we wait to come into contact
yeah.
with the place where it can be
right.
expressed.
Yeah, that's good.
Right? Or the place where it can be fortified.
That's right.
So I'm interested in that for you. places in your teaching and also in your work life that is not directly teaching, mm-hmm. where you feel, as when you met with your colleagues, where you feel your values and your personal value reinforced mm-hmm. in a way that can let you stay in touch with that value mm-hmm. of, or with that soft experience yeah. of patience.
I want to say the first piece that helped me with this was before I got to meet with my colleagues and actually have them hear me, was seeing on my shelf, I've got these three books on pedagogy by bell hooks mm-hmm. and seeing it and being like, oh yeah, she knows. mm-hmm. Because she's been a great mentor for me through those books about how to teach and where to find the value in teaching. Here are some ways to come into relationship with your students that respect everyone's basic humanity. It was at first a part of feeling impatient with myself, like, of course you can't teach like bell hooks because you are not an internationally recognized author and scholar and activist, and you can't like set the terms for your classes in the way she does, and you don't have decades of experience teaching, etc. And then also you reminded me when I was telling you all of this, it was hard for her too. And that's also in the books. And it was hard for her in ways that it will never be hard for me. So just any connection, even if it, like, I can't call her and talk to her, but I can remember that the value is there, and it's been hard for other people who are doing amazing work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Lama Rad was teaching about, he was kind of broadening the Buddhist process of taking refuge. You know, so there's, you take refuge in the Buddha, you take refuge in the Dharma, you take refuge in the Sangha, which yeah. just means the teacher,
the teachings,
way, the teachings,
the community.
And the community, right? So yeah. he was really having us sit and go to the people who are your teachers. Just sit with them and welcome them.
Yeah.
And feel that you can offer up your stuckness or your questions or your doubt to the teachers. And then, like, for the teachings, he was like, think about the book that you need to have with you, like the book that's on your shelf, the book that you need to turn to again and again and again, and like lift that up, acknowledge it. And he went through 7 things, actually. He made it that much bigger, and it was really beautiful. But it was so helpful to me, just the same way that like metta practice is so helpful in the actual doing of it, where you just go and you say, people have come before me, I'm in community, who's around me who's doing this work, and bring them up to fortify.
One of the things I'm noticing about what we're both saying is part of impatience, I wonder, or maybe part of patience on the other hand, maybe they're not exactly linear, but part of what helps the feeling of patience is a feeling of community, like not isolation. Part of the feeling of impatience is maybe a feeling of isolation. In my case, nobody's going to hear me. And then remembering or connecting with the remembering that people will hear me and that I'm not the only one saying these things was one of the pieces that allowed for the spaciousness of patience to come in.
That seems like you nailed it. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah. You're welcome.
See you next time.
Okay.